It is a profoundly massive collision. I mean, we are looking at a philosophical battle playing out at the absolute highest levels of global power. And, it dictates everything from how your apps are designed to international border policy.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is to just pull back the curtain on this hidden tension. We're going to explore two radically different blueprints for the future of humanity. On one side, you have the Silicon Valley techno-theology championed by billionaire Peter Thiel. And on the other, the traditional yet highly disruptive Catholic values being boldly asserted by the recently elected Pope Leo XIV.
And to do that, we are synthesizing a really fascinating collection of texts today. We have a dense theological critique from the Vatican's own publication, L'Osservatore Romano. We're cross-referencing that with a deep dive analysis of Thiel's ideology from the French journal Le Grand Continent, an essay on the modern politics of love from the National Catholic Reporter, and recent BBC reporting covering Pope Leo's geopolitical shockwaves.
We are here strictly as your guides to unpack the fascinating ideas, the underlying why, and the how contained within these original texts.
Exactly. Just looking at the philosophy behind it all.
Right. So let's start on the West Coast, the Silicon Valley side of this equation. Most people know Peter Thiel as the venture capitalist behind PayPal and Palantir, or the guy who wrote the first massive check to Facebook. But our source from Le Grand Continent uses a totally different phrase to describe him. They call him a political theologian.
Yeah.
How does a tech billionaire earn that title? I mean, that's quite a leap.
It is, but it traces all the way back to his time as an undergraduate philosophy student at Stanford in the late 1980s.
Yeah.
He sat in on lectures by a French polymath and anthropologist named René Girard.
Okay.
And Girard had this sweeping, unified theory of human behavior called mimetic desire. And discovering it completely rewired Thiel's brain. It essentially became the operating system for his entire empire.
So mimetic meaning imitation, right?
Yeah.
I've heard the term thrown around. But mechanically, how does Girard say this works in our daily lives?
So Girard argued that we are fundamentally delusional about our own autonomy. We believe our desires are spontaneous and original.
Like, I want something because I just want it.
Exactly. You think you want a specific luxury watch because you appreciate the craftsmanship, or you want a particular career because it aligns with your inner passions. Girard says that is a comforting fiction.
A fiction, wow.
Yeah. In reality, human beings simply desire what other people desire. We look to models, peers, celebrities, rivals. We see what they value, and we unconsciously copy that desire.
So I don't actually want the watch. I just want the status the watch gives the guy I saw wearing it.
You want to be the guy wearing it, basically.
But wait, on the surface, that just sounds like basic marketing or, I don't know, keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
Why is that observation treated as a profound philosophical bedrock?
Because of the unavoidable mathematical trap it creates. If my desires are copied from you and we both start desiring the exact same object, an object that cannot be shared, we are suddenly no longer just imitating each other. We become rivals.
Oh, I see.
Right. Girard theorized that this convergence of mimetic desire inevitably leads to fierce competition, which then spirals into resentment and ultimately what he called mimetic violence. It is a destructive contagion that threatens to literally tear society apart from the inside.
Okay, my mind immediately jumps to the digital world, like the like button, the retweet, the follower count.
Oh, absolutely.
Under this framework, social media isn't just a place to share vacation photos. It is an algorithmic machine engineered to accelerate this exact kind of mimetic envy.
And Thiel saw that potential before almost anyone else.
Yeah.
The source material notes that Thiel actively mentored a young Mark Zuckerberg, specifically introducing him to Girard's theories.
Wait, really? He taught Zuckerberg about mimetic desire?
Yes. Early on, Thiel realized that whoever controls a mechanism that produces, quantifies, and amplifies human desire essentially holds the keys to the kingdom. He didn't invest in Facebook because he thought it was a fun directory for college students. He saw it as the ultimate algorithmic realization of human mimetic desire playing out on a planetary scale.
That is just kind of wild to me because I struggle to buy that at face value. You're telling me a guy who genuinely believes human interaction inevitably spirals into destructive, violent envy decided to invest billions into connecting everybody on Earth.
Yeah, it sounds like a contradiction.
How do you reconcile creating social media with a profound distrust of human connection?
Well, you reconcile it through control and monopoly. And this is the genius, albeit a dark genius, of Thiel's business strategy. If you accept the premise that human competition destroys value and leads to violence, the only winning move is to refuse to play the game entirely.
Refuse to play the game.
Right. You don't try to beat your competitors in a crowded marketplace. You create an entirely new market where you are the sole operator.
Oh, this is his famous concept of going from zero to one.
Exactly.
You don't build a slightly better search engine. You invent something so unprecedented that you face zero mimetic rivalry.
That is the core mechanism. It's a sanctuary from the storm of competition. And he applied this deeply cynical view of human nature to his own employees, too. Look at the famous PayPal Mafia, the legendary early team at PayPal that went on to found Tesla, LinkedIn, Yelp, and YouTube.
Right. That group is infamous in Silicon Valley.
Thiel deliberately gave every single executive completely distinct, non-overlapping responsibilities.
So instead of two VPs fighting for the same budget, they are completely siloed.
It's totally mechanistic. If you put two highly ambitious, intelligent people in a room and give them overlapping goals, Gerard's theory dictates they will become rivals and sabotage the company.
Wow.
So by granting every employee a strict, impenetrable monopoly over their specific domain, Thiel artificially neutralized the mimetic conflict. He essentially engineered a corporate structure designed to bypass the fundamental flaw of the human species.
Okay, so if Thiel genuinely believes we are all trapped in this endless loop of envy and violence, that we are fundamentally flawed creatures, how does he envision society surviving long term? Because this has to go beyond just structuring a tech startup, right?
Yeah, it does. The Silicon Valley business strategy inevitably morphs into a profound political vision. The sources identify a fascinating generational tension at play here. Thiel and his cohort basically belong to Generation X.
Okay.
They looked at the massive, rigid institutions built by the baby boomers, traditional banking, legacy media, government bureaucracies, and they didn't attempt to reform them. Because reform implies that the underlying human element can be improved.
So can't reform the humans running the institutions? You just bypass them entirely.
You make them obsolete through computational power.
Yeah.
PayPal bypasses traditional banking. Google bypasses legacy media. This ideological shift ties directly into a prophetic text highly revered in Silicon Valley circles called The Sovereign Individual. It predicts the inevitable collapse of the traditional nation state.
Let me guess. Because capital becomes entirely digital and fluid, governments lose the ability to tax or regulate it.
That is the economic trigger, yes. But the societal result is what really matters here. The sovereign individual anticipates a neo-medieval world, a world run by a cognitive elite. These so-called sovereign individuals, who operate in a digital cyberspace completely detached from geography, borders, or traditional laws.
And everyone else.
The rest of the masses, still trapped in their geographic and mimetic constraints, are essentially left behind as superfluous.
Man. The critique from the Vatican in L'Osservatore Romano is starting to make a lot of sense now. The piece compares Thiel's ideology to the philosopher Thomas Hobbes. It points out that Thiel has an irredeemably negative view of humanity, the classic Hobbesian idea that man is a wolf to man.
And the Lagrange continent analysis dives deeply into Thiel's recent theological essays on this exact point. Thiel believes humanity is racing toward a stark, terrifying binary choice. Because of our mimetic violence, amplified by modern technology, he thinks we face either total annihilation, be it nuclear war, climate collapse, or uncontrolled AI, or we submit to a global technocratic regime that enforces peace through absolute centralized control.
How on earth does the Vatican respond to this?
To understand the Vatican's response, you have to understand the man delivering it. The BBC reporting gives crucial context on Pope Leo XIV. He is the first U.S.-born pope in history, originally from Chicago. But he didn't rise through the ranks in comfortable Western dioceses.
Right, he spent decades as a missionary bishop in Peru.
Which completely shapes his worldview. His entire theological perspective has been forged through direct, daily contact with profound poverty, indigenous communities, and the grueling realities of mass migration.
That sets up an incredible ideological collision with Silicon Valley. Let's look at the rebuttal from L'Osservatore Romano, written by Eugenio Mazzarella. He takes direct aim at Thiel's foundational zero-to-one philosophy.
Yeah, Mazzarella dismantles the idea that technology offers any real salvation. He argues that this quantum leap Silicon Valley is constantly chasing the next AI model, the next planetary data system is, spiritually speaking, a complete illusion.
Why? Because a faster microchip doesn't cure human envy.
Precisely the point Mazzarella makes. He argues that all these technological miracles, all this unprecedented creation of wealth, merely hands incredibly powerful new tools to what the Apostle Paul called the old man.
Let's define that for the listener. Yep. The old man is the biblical concept of human nature driven by flesh, greed, and that exact mimetic envy Gerard identified.
Right. It is the unredeemed human. You can build the most sophisticated, all-seeing AI in human history. But if it is being programmed and utilized by the old man, humanity hasn't advanced an inch. We remain spiritually at zero.
It's like Thiel is obsessively building a faster, crash-proof car, equipped with endless sensors and predictive algorithms just to keep it from veering off a cliff. But Pope Leo is standing there saying, the engineering of the car doesn't matter if the driver behind the wheel is still completely blind. You can't fix the road until you heal the driver's eyes.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize it. The Vatican's assertion is that true transcendence isn't technological, it's anthropological. It revolves around the Pauline concept of the new man.
But what does the new man actually look like mechanically? We hear terms like interior peace or changing the human heart. But for the person listening, how does that actually counter Gerard's engine of envy?
It functions as a complete psychological and spiritual uncoupling. Gerard says you are doomed to view your neighbor's success as your own failure, driving you to rivalry. The concept of the new man is a state of being where your self-worth is entirely disconnected from what the people around you possess or desire.
So you just don't play the game, but not by building a monopoly, just by not competing.
Yes. When Christ refuses to become a political conqueror and willingly goes to the cross, he breaks the cycle of mimetic violence. He doesn't fight for the scarce resource. If your heart is fundamentally transformed to operate without that envy, you can achieve external peace without needing a technocratic dictatorship, a Palantir, to enforce it.
So we have these massive high-altitude concepts, Thiel's old man managed by surveillance and algorithms versus Pope Leo's new man transformed by grace and detachment. But if you take the Vatican's idea of unlimited grace seriously, it completely breaks the traditional political models we use to allocate resources.
It really does.
Take the recent comments by Dady Vance, for example, highlighted in the National Catholic Reporter.
Vance is a prominent political figure closely allied with Thiel's technological movement, and his statements offer a perfect case study of this philosophy in action. During a television interview, Vance argued for a strict, pragmatic hierarchy of care.
What was the hierarchy?
He stated you must love your family first, then your neighbor, then your community, your nation, and only after all of those layers are secure do you prioritize the rest of the world.
The article points out this isn't a new concept at all, right? It echoes an old medieval framework called Ordo Amoris, the Order of Charity, heavily debated by theologians like Thomas Aquinas. And honestly, to the average person, Vance's list probably sounds incredibly logical.
Sure, it makes intuitive sense.
It's a fortress model of compassion, where you pull up the drawbridge to protect your own courtyard first, and you only throw scraps over the wall to the outside world if you happen to have leftovers. It's like putting your own oxygen mask on first on an airplane.
It sounds logical if, and only if, you view the world through a lens of profound scarcity and fear. And that is the exact premise the National Catholic Reporter piece written by Kat Armas attacks. She argues that enforcing this hierarchy perpetuates the destructive myth that some human beings are inherently more deserving of care or oxygen than others.
The progressive Catholic counterargument is that love isn't a finite commodity. It's not a pie where giving a slice to a stranger means your child starves.
Exactly. Armas uses the parable of the Good Samaritan to demolish the fortress model. When Jesus is asked, "Who is my neighbor?" he doesn't pull out a map and draw concentric circles radiating outward from the family home.
Right.
He tells a story where the geographic and religious insiders, the ones inside the fortress, ignore a dying man. The hero is the Samaritan, a foreigner, a stranger, practically a political enemy. The core mechanism of the parable is to obliterate the very borders and categorizations of wordiness that the Ordo Amoris tries to institutionalize.
And this theological clash over scarcity versus abundance is the exact engine driving Pope Leo's geopolitical actions. If we look at the BBC reporting, Pope Leo is sending shockwaves through the political landscape by directly confronting the U.S. administration.
The shock stems partly from his background. Because Leo is American-born, many conservative factions assumed he would be a reliable political ally, perhaps a return to a more traditionalist papacy after Pope Francis.
But that's not what happened.
Not at all. His theology is proving radically disruptive to their policy goals.
The BBC article details Pope Leo publicly calling out the inhuman nature of mass IC roundups and deportations. He also issued a stark warning against the U.S. military bombing Venezuelan ships suspected of carrying drugs, arguing that military escalation doesn't defend peace, it only multiplies violence.
And he isn't making these statements to insert himself into partisan bickering. His geopolitical stance is the direct, unavoidable result of his view on human nature. He spent decades as a migrant bishop. He knows the people crossing these borders.
He doesn't view them as a biological threat to a scarce economic resource. He views them as kin.
Yes. Keel's worldview, and the political machinery aligned with it, is obsessively focused on managing scarcity and mitigating the envy of the old man. It structurally requires borders, strict hierarchies, and surveillance because it believes human interaction is fundamentally dangerous.
And Pope Leo?
Pope Leo's universe operates on the wild, unrestrained abundance of the kingdom of God. It demands that we look at the foreigner, the migrant, the perceived enemy, not as a competitor in a zero-sum game of mimetic rivalry, but as an equal sibling capable of mutual love.
You, our listener, are standing at the absolute center of this crossroad. You are watching two massive competing blueprints for your future fight for dominance. On one side, Silicon Valley's tech feudalism, offering a pessimistic comfort. The belief that you are a creature of envy destined for conflict, and that you require opaque algorithms, corporate monopolies, and digital borders to save you from your own destructive instincts.
And opposing that, you have Pope Leo's traditional yet intensely radical Catholic vision, a vision insisting that you are not a slave to biological or mimetic programming. It argues that the human heart can undergo a fundamental transformation, achieving a level of abundant love that renders the algorithms and the drawbridges entirely obsolete.
It's a paradigm shift.